This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, let's get right to it. A lot of softball in hour number one, some baseball news. Now we're going to switch gears and go football on you. Number one, again, we always say one of our favorites. Everybody's one of our favorites. I'm going to put that to the side.
Sure.
However, this, in my opinion, may be, if not the number one foodie that we bring onto the show.
Yeah.
Dave Clawson, head football coach at Wake Forest, joins us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to see you guys again. Thanks for having me on. And again, I'm a big fan of your show. And keeping with the foodie theme, you know, instead of that appearance fee you usually send me, I'm going to take one of those custard pies I was hearing about.
Hey, now let me tell you something.
Oh, you want one of my mom's custard pies, huh?
Miss
Egg Jean. Custard, all right. Yeah.
I mean, I was watching that show, and I don't even know what the sports subject was. I just fixated on that custard pie.
And, Coach?
You had the whole exit and the setup. Where you guys were going to exchange it, I was thinking about driving down from Winston and just getting a slice of it.
Coach, let me tell you something. You and I have kind of bonded on food. I had never had an egg custard pie, and Wes's mom, Miss Jean, goes old school, mm-hmm. old fashioned, and it was spectacular. I got to tell you, it was spectacular.
Yep.
And just one more thing. One more great thing that originated in Winston-Salem, I understand.
Exactly right. It all starts in Winston-Salem, big man.
You
know how it goes. Exactly right. You've tied it all together perfectly.
Nice work. All right. How normal was this spring? Let's start there. How normal did you get, given that you're still coming out of the pandemic, but I know all the vaccinations, testing, whatnot, but how normal, how close to normal did you get?
We're getting a lot closer. It wasn't like 19, obviously a lot better than 20, that we only got five practices in, but we didn't have any interruptions. We had a handful of cases, a little bit of contact tracing, but it certainly seemed a lot better, a lot more normal, and, it was fun. It really was. So, we're still wearing masks. There's still separation in meetings and social distancing, but it was a lot better in the fall.
Coach, I know this much. When you have a quarterback that returns with that kind of experience, it makes you sleep better at night, but it really has got to feel good knowing you've got 20 returning starters on a team last year that gave you glimpses of, hey, you know what, we're close to really figuring this thing out and getting on a crazy run. Expectation level has to be through the roof in 21.
It is. We have 20 of 22 starters back, but there's also a realization that as you have these interviews with other head coaches, the conference will probably never be more experienced either. A lot of these teams have a lot of returning seniors. But where it really helped us is we have 9 returning super seniors. So we had 11, 12 guys leave. We had 3 guys leave, Boogie Basham, who was a number 2 pick, our kicker, Jack Crane. And then we had a player who went into the portal. Everybody else wanted to come back to Wake Forest for their 5th, 6th, and in one case, a 7th year. So you have these 9 scholarship players still in your program. And then because of COVID and the pandemic, a lot more players enrolled mid-year. Their high schools weren't open. They weren't playing football. And we had 8 mid-year guys. So we had 17 additional scholarship players for this spring. And we just had a lot more good players out there. So not only do we have the 20 starters back, I really feel better about our depth. We were able to go 3 deep this year, which we, most years we're lucky if we can go 2 deep.
We have talked in the past about young guys getting opportunities. Last year, young guys got opportunities for a myriad of reasons, right? So to say you build depth from the bottom up here or from the youth up, rookie level up, then you factor in what you just mentioned, the wild landscape of transfer portal, grad transfers, all these other things. How's roster management been? You're talking about as deep as you've ever been. How many different pieces are in play here, Coach?
So don't get me going on the roster management. We I'm chairing the ACC head coaches this year, and we've had so many meetings. And, you know, I think what the NCAA did and the football oversight and NCAA council last year was a good thing. Give everybody an extra year of eligibility. And mm-hmm. the benefit of that is this year. There's a realization that you're giving these seniors an extra year, and you already have committed a freshman class. And so those scholarships this year don't count against the 85. So roster management in 2021 is easy. Where it's going to get really hard is 22.
Correct.
Again, they gave everybody a free pass and gave everybody an extra year of eligibility. I have no idea how to handle this in 22. Theoretically, we should not recruit one high school player, because if mm-hmm. every single one of our seniors or who would be seniors chooses to come back, you don't lose anybody. And we all know that's not going to happen. But, I mean, how do you recruit a freshman class and these seniors in their mind all have an extra year to come back if they want to come back? And we have no idea if they're going to want to come back. Do they have great years and want to go to the NFL? Do we play a full season? And some of these guys that maybe aren't NFL players say, hey, it's been a great 4 years, a great 5 years. I'm ready to go to the next stage of my life, whatever that may be. And we're just, you know, again, we you know, raised the magic wand, gave everybody that extra year, and everybody's happy. But we've created a heck of a problem for 22, 23, and beyond. And it just doesn't seem like anybody wants to talk about it or address it. And they're really putting head coaches in a really bad spot.
I want to go backwards with you a little bit. We've talked about everybody coming back, 20 or 22 starters. Did you have a conversation with Boogie after he was drafted? And if so, what was that like?
Well, I texted him and just, you know, how proud I am of him. You know, first of all, we sat with him last year and, you know, went over where his draft status was and where we thought we'd get picked and told him we'd support any decision he made. That he was going to be drafted a year ago. It wasn't where he wanted to go or thought he should go. And that's a hard decision, because when you come back for that extra year, there's a little bit of risk involved. You know, do I get hurt? And then you have COVID. But his decision to play, to not opt out, I think really proved beneficial to him. He jumped in the draft. He ended up with a great organization. I think the Buffalo Bills with Sean McDermott are extremely well run. Culturally, I think it's a really good fit for him in terms of how they run their program. And, you know, it's my hometown. So it's one more reason to root for the Bills.
Yeah. Hey, I want to go back to Pac mentioned Sam Hartman at the top. We were tinkering around last week with, you know, guys coming back this year who we wanted to keep an eye on. Roddy Jones and I were doing it on the Thursday show. And Ja'Cory Robertson's name came up. And the reason it did is because I thought he really took a step, maybe two steps forward for you last year. Got off to a great start, kind of settled in, and he became a guy who this year, I don't know where your expectation is, but I think he can be one of those guys in this league for Wake Forest and maybe in the ACC as a whole, Coach.
I mean, I would argue he was one of those guys last year. You know, if you look at the numbers he put up, his production, you know, to say he could be one of those guys, you look at the returning receivers in the ACC, he is one of those guys. So he had a great season. Yeah. He's gotten better every year. We return every single starter on offense. And Sam had a great year. I mean, he had a bad 15-play stretch in the bowl game. But other than that, he played really well. We're excited about the younger quarterbacks in our program. Both Michael Kern and Mitch Griffiths had really good springs for us. And, again, I just think, you know, the benefit of going through last year and playing a bunch of young players is now you have all these guys back, and not just starters, but guys in your two deep. That got to play a lot of football last year. So we're excited about Sam, Ja'Cory. But, I mean, Donovan Green, until he got hurt, was on his way to having a great, strong finish. You know, Torian Perry and Donald Stewart and Jamal Banks are all young receivers. I think we're getting close to getting back to the where we were in 19, that we had Kendall Hinton, Scotty Washington, Sage Surratt, and all three of those guys are on NFL rosters. So I think we're close to getting back to that level.
Speaking of Kendall Hinton, it's worthy of talking about his story, isn't it? That's a really unique story coming up.
Yeah, anytime you bring up Kendall Hinton, I get a big smile on my face. I just, I love Kendall. And, his journey here wasn't easy. A lot of ups and downs, but it finished on a high note. And, what happened last year with the Broncos and, who would imagine, this company of three, Condoleezza Rice, Pete Buttigieg, and Kendall Hinton. So how many people would have put those three together? But those are the three graduation speakers at Wake Forest this weekend. So we're proud of Kendall. I bet you his speech will sound a little bit different than the other two in a very authentic, genuine, meaningful way.
Dave, in many ways, does he kind of personify the perseverance it takes to kind of buy in here? I mean, he was a ground floor guy for you. I mean, came in there, after you had just gotten the job and that kind of thing and moved forward with the program. Does he kind of personify the building of Wake Forest football?
Well, and I've said this to Kendall. I don't know if I'd use him as the model of what we want Wake Forest to be in terms of his progression. He had a couple self-inflicted wounds.
Sure.
But his determination, his loyalty to his teammates. Kendall was always a great teammate, was great in the locker room, was a competitor, mm-hmm. And really, really cared. And his parents did a great job of raising him. And I'm just super proud of Kendall. And that, a lot of times the best relationships have a rocky start. And, Kendall's first couple of years here were a little bit rocky, but because I think we worked through that together and we never gave up on each other, that he certainly, of all the former players, is one of the closest relationships I have right now.
All right. The last time you sent me something, it was, I think it was a stir fry you were working on. I know it's been a hit and miss in the restaurant world during the pandemic. So any tip, any good news you got for me on the food front? Anything you pass along?
Yeah, I think, everything in football or broadcasting, right, it's a progression and you learn. But then you also got to experiment a little bit. New blitz, new play. And one of the transitions I made this past year is instead of getting outside on the grill for the steaks, I started broiling them in a cast iron pan.
Nice.
And wow, that is I'm really glad I learned that. It's a lot, I don't want to say it's easier, but to get a consistent temperature, if you like it medium rare or something like that, I tell you what, you can't beat the cast iron pan in the broiler.
I'm so with you on that.
That's my my new culinary tip of the year.
I like where you're going with that, Coach, because I'm with you. We've got one, and it's used often, and it's good. I mean, when you figure it out, it's really good.
It's really a great change up to the grill.
Yeah.
And if you get the pan that has the little grooves on it, you still get that seared look.
Yeah.
And it keeps it a lot juicier. And, again, it's easier to get the exact temperature when you do it that way. So that's kind of been the new development. As we head into the 21 season, I'll come up with something else. The pressure is every time I come on Packer and Durham, I've got to come up with something new. So you guys are making me better here.
Now, well, listen, you have risen to every challenge, which is one of the reasons we like to talk. Listen, we can talk ball with you all the time, but this is the real stuff that people can take from the morning show and go, hey, you know what? That Clawson fellow's talking about getting that cast iron thing, honey. We need to go buy one of those to – they work. They're worth the price because that's the way to go. I'm with you on that.
Here's the funny part of this deal. I sense that like Cooking with Clawson featuring Mark Packer could become some content for ACC Network somewhere. Just a little half hour.
We do.
You do five or six little mini episodes, get people excited about it. We get some, as Packer says, nothing happens till something gets sold.
That's right,
Pack?
That's exactly right.
So the idea, Dave, would be, you got the broiled steak now. We're getting that. We've got the stir fry. I'm sure there's a dessert or something, you know.
Miss Jean. We throw Miss Jean in there.
Appetizer action here.
Coach, we get Miss Jean.
That's where the custard pie fits in.
Right.
So one of my favorite things of the spring is the last few years here, we've joined a CSA. It's Community Supported Agriculture. And every morning I get up at, 7 o'clock and I go over to the Winston-Salem Fairgrounds and they basically have a market. And you don't know what you're going to get. Wow. You don't know if it's going to be fresh spinach, asparagus, organic meats. And that becomes kind of the cooking for Sunday. Mm. So my son the other day goes, Dad, I think today, instead of cooking from a recipe, we should cook from the heart. So we just went with this sausage and peppers pasta with onions that was really good. That we all made from the ingredients we got. And
That's the way to do it.
To hear my son say, hey, we need to cook from the heart.
I just love it.
But it was a good meal. And
there you go.
We had fun doing it together.
I love it. Well, listen, one of these days, though, we are going to get together and finally break bread. We've talked about it forever, but the pandemic's going to put everything on hold. But we are definitely going to do that, Coach. That's on the list, on the agenda.
Well, hey, if the network and COVID allows you guys to come up and spend a day here with us in fall camp, I'd love to take you guys out to lunch. There's a lot of good spots in Winston.
Well, and after that, we'll take you out to dinner. Okay. How about that? You take us to lunch, we'll take you to dinner.
All right.
And if we get curry involved, he can take us to breakfast. We'll just make a full day out of it.
and that's where we're always a step ahead. Usually the lunch tab's a little smaller than the dinner tab.
Yeah, I like the way you're thinking. I like the way you're thinking. Well, stay healthy.
Hey, thanks, Coach. Be well.
Okay, thank you, guys.
You bet. Dave Clawson, head football coach at Wake Forest. Always a good time. Don't forget about the Deeks now in some of these discussions. 20 of 22, and now we're talking about, three deep in some spots, Pack? Open with Old Dominion on September 3rd.
He is a...
The Swiss. Here we go with the Swiss.
He is a good football coach. And, again, I cannot... I've said this 100 times if I said it once on this show. Wake Forest is so fortunate to have him as the head football. He is a perfect fit. He gets it. He understands the culture. He doesn't cut corners. He understands the academic situation. He recruits accordingly, and he can flat out X and O. And the Deeks, with 20 or 22 starters back, everybody on the offensive side, I promise you, Wake Forest will be a problem for people this year. They are going to be a problem for folks. It's telling you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We still got the football on the brain, Wes. And we're going to kind of concentrate on Miami for a second, just for argument's sake. And, the Canes, huge expectations. Man, I hear it on the radio show in the afternoons, Pack, is this the year for the U? Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to find out in week one when you play Alabama. You'll find out exactly where you stand in week one. And that early part of the schedule is no joke. I mean, regardless of the outcome of week one, you got to be ready to go with App State, Michigan State, and everybody else coming behind it. But big picture, though, regarding the U, right? I think they're always an interesting case study.
I think so. And I think one of the things is that, right, is the whole Miami back deal. And, you've had former players on. I remember Santana Moss gave you a great interview on Off Campus about just kind of the whole concept of if Miami's back and what constitutes it. And it's a built-in deal for any football coach, whether it's Larry Coker, whether it's Al Golden, Randy Shannon, whoever. Manny Diaz is 14-10 in two seasons, but he's winless in two bowl games. Now there's a measuring stick, though, of other people in the league, right? I mean, look at the other programs around him and kind of how it's worked for coaches getting ready to start their third season. You get Scott Satterfield at Louisville. You got Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech. And you got Mack Brown's second trip to Chapel Hill. And it kind of puts you in this spot of, where are we talking about with Miami? Miami's had a pretty good run. In fact, let's go to ACC football in the last 5 years here. So while it's not been the 90s, right, or the 80s, they're still the second winningest team in the ACC in the last 5 years, Pac.
Yeah,
and I still think that would surprise people.
That's a bar bet. We know about Clemson, right? But who would be number two? Well, the answer is Miami. That's right, the U. And by the way, just a side note, when I saw this stat, Clemson's got 6 losses, right, in the last 5 seasons. Let me put things in perspective, right? In perspective. Do you know how many ACC teams have lost 6 or more conference games a year in the last 5 years? If you guess 9, you'd be right. BC, Syracuse, Duke, wow, Virginia, North Carolina, Louisville, NC State, Georgia Tech, Florida State have had at least one season where they've lost 6 or more conference games. Mm-hmm. Clemson's lost 6, period, in the last 5 years. But Miami's the story here about can the U now join the mix? North Carolina going to have huge expectations. You mentioned with Mack Brown, there's going to be a lot of top 10, top 15 love for the Heels in this this upcoming summer, ending into the season. Miami needs to join the mix. Florida State needs to eventually join the mix. But you get a sense that North Carolina and Miami today are further ahead than the Noles. But for Miami, though, this is a team that has to be good in our league. Has to be good. I mean, Jim Phillips has already talked about, hey, football is going to be paramount. And for that to be the case, Miami has got to be able to say, guess what? We're back to ready to participate on an elite level. The championships, college football playoffs, all the above.
Well, let's go to the NFL. The product line is strong, okay? It's just a matter of establishing degrees of continuity. And Miami's had the highs and lows that any program has experienced. But they've done pretty well here when it comes to, qualifying the players that go to the next level in terms of draft picks. Because in the last 20 years, and we talked about this last week on the heels of the draft, in the last 20 years, Miami's been as successful as anybody nationally and number one in the ACC in a handful of categories here. First overall, first and first round picks, offensive linemen, linebackers, DBs, running backs. I mean, look, it's the pedigree is there. The patience is probably what might be lacking because you get a glimpse, like you had with Coach Rick a couple of years ago, and then it tails back off. And I know people are hoping, hey, come off that win on Notre Dame on a Saturday night in South Florida, that game you were there for, Pac, on game day, and the unbelievable atmosphere on campus. But they couldn't go the next step. And that's probably the frustration point, I think, for a lot of Miami fans. And now you come back to the biggest question of the offseason, De'Aaron King's knee going to be ready to play opening week against Alabama. And as you said earlier, the test is going to be real right out of the gate for Coach Diaz.
Getting players is not a problem. Developing players to the next level, that stat right line, that line we just threw on you, it proves exactly what they've been able to accomplish. Now you got to put it all together and say, guess what? We're now ready to go compete against the Clemsons, Alabamas, and Ohio States of the world. And for a team like Miami, like I said, they're going to open up with Alabama in week one. They're hoping maybe at some point in time they see a Clemson, for argument's sake, if the Tigers are as good as advertised in an ACC championship game. But Miami's got to be good in this league. We've been doing this radio show / TV thing for the last couple of years, and I've told you, there is a combination of teams in this league for the Atlantic Coast Conference football narrative nationally to change. Clemson needs to keep doing what they're doing, but Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech in particular need to step up and get the job done. And if you get a situation where North Carolina or NC State or Pitt or Louisville or Virginia has one of those kind of runs, awesome. That's fantastic. But the combination of teams with a national brand, Clemson, Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, have to be good. When they're down, the national perception is going to be, oh, the league's got one team and everybody else. The only way you change it is to go beat people, and that's got to happen.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Our next guest makes his debut here, Jeff. And here's the deal, Wes. He's your ACC Player of the Week last week in baseball. And he went off again last night.
Wait. Now, here's the deal, though. Joey Loperfido has played in 6,207 baseball games for Duke in 4 years. And I'm not even sure it's 4 years. According to the math, Joey, you turned 22 yesterday. I would have sworn you were 32 because it feels like you've been playing baseball at Duke for about a decade and a half. First of all, happy birthday belatedly. Congratulations on a three-hit night on your birthday. That's pretty good. 155. Yesterday, I just checked this out. I wanted to make sure I had this right. I just looked it up. Yesterday was career game 155 at Duke. You've started every game you've played in. I mean, number one, the durability. Number two, I mean, it's got to be something special, too. It's a point of pride at this point, I'm guessing, how much you've contributed to that program.
Yeah, it's definitely a point of pride. And I actually broke my wrist a week into the season my sophomore year. So I think we'd be at, you know, in the 170s if it wasn't for that at this point.
All right, so what's going on, man? The ball coming in there looks like a beach ball, right? I mean, you guys start all of a sudden you're getting that vibe, boys. I don't care what you throw, I'm going to hit it. So what's going on from that perspective? Because you're hitting the daylights out of the baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it comes through a lot of hard work. And I think through preparation is kind of where I get that confidence. But other than that, I mean, our staff does a great job. Our coaches do a great job kind of getting us ready with the scouting report and preparing us for every week. And then when I'm in the box, I just like to keep it simple. So I've never really been somebody that guesses pitches too much, or tries to think about too many cues at once. I just try to stay in my legs, get a good pitch to hit, kind of keep it simple up there.
You have seen this league kind of go through a growth phase. You've seen it grow through a pitching phase. Where is it now in your mind? You're one of the top 5-6 hitters in this league. Is this an offensive geared league this year as opposed to maybe what you saw a year or two ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think this year more than ever, especially with all the talent coming back with the shortened draft last year, I think it's a league that is much more well-rounded. You know, you see teams one weekend beat up on somebody and the next weekend, you know, go 1-3 on the week. So I think it just speaks to the competitiveness of the league. I think this is probably the best the league's ever been this year, especially. So I think it's just a competitive league and you kind of see it play out in ACC play with, you know, the amount of teams beating each other as we've gone through the season here.
Joe, you want to go back to what you said a second ago about keeping it simple. You know, and I go back to my days of playing golf, and when things were the ball's going all over the place, you had no idea where you're going to hit it. You had 8,000 swing thoughts. But when you're really playing well, it, like you said, it is simple. There's the ball. Hit it. I mean, there's no need to get cute with it or worry about where's your hands or feet or balance or swing and all. So, well, that's it. What is the swing thought for you other than see ball, hit ball? There's got to be at least something, some mechanism that you say, okay, here's the one thing I want in place. Okay, good. Throw it and let me go hit it.
Yeah, I think for me, honestly, the biggest thing I think about is just approach. Like when I'm in the box, it's just competitive me versus pitcher. But before I get in there, it's, you know, I'm thinking about using the whole field. I'm thinking about hitting the ball where it's pitched. I'm good to the opposite field, and I'm good up the middle. So I think when I'm at my best, you know, it's just not to really answer your question, but I'm hitting with a clear head, and it's just all the preparation I put in and all the hard work of that approach, staying up the middle and just trying to use the whole field. That's really all it is.
And I want to follow up with that, too. Did you do anything in the off season as far as mental breakdown in terms of approach as opposed to anything physical to get yourself in this position where you're just, again, hitting everything in sight?
I mean, I made it through COVID. I toughed that out with everybody else in this country. So I think that when something like that goes on, it just stresses the importance of the people in your life, your support system. You know, and I'm very fortunate to have a ton of people that support me, a lot of people that's been following my career, and a lot of people invested in me as a person and in my teammates. So when you got that kind of support around you, it makes things pretty easy on that end.
Very cool.
Joey, I know it's been a little tough in terms of wins and losses for you guys, and you got a big weekend with Virginia Tech coming up. At this point in the season, how much of the veteran presence in your mind is necessary for, you know, making this push in the final couple weekends?
I think it's really necessary, and I think it goes to show you just like how these last 15 games can really impact your postseason resume. So just finishing strong, getting two series wins, and then hopefully win the ACC tournament, which I think we're very capable of doing. It's a little bit of an underdog this year. So, I mean, you're kind of never out in this league. And as I said earlier, the competitiveness and the back and forth going on, you know, we're not in a great spot right now, but we're definitely still in it. So we're looking forward to it.
Joey, it's all about matchups when it comes to pitcher and batter, right? Mm-hmm. Who in this league, no matter what he throws you, you know what? I'm going to hit it. Because I know there's always a guy that you go, man, I don't care what he throws. I can't hit him. Then there's the flip side. No matter what he throws, I'm going to hit it. I'm going to hit it hard. Maybe there's a guy on your team that you guys are messing around with. Hey, I don't care what you throw. You know I'm going to hit it. So I want the positive part of that. Is there a guy all in right. this league that I don't care what? You can tell me that whatever. I'm going to knock this thing all over the place. Who is that guy?
Trying to think. To be honest with you guys, I don't pay a ton of attention to who's on the mound. I'm more focused on myself and our team. But if we were playing, it would be a righty. Probably a righty, a little three-quarter arm action, three-pitch mix, and he'd probably throw a fastball first pitch.
And it's going somewhere.
Look at that.
It's going left field or right up the middle, center field.
Yeah.
In the gapping it right like that. Bam. Well, you're on the fire, man. You're a rolling.
Hey, Joey, real quick, you've seen Chris Pollard build this thing, and Pack and I got great respect for the work he's done at Duke. I mean, he's done a good job. I mean, you've been a part of the spectacular team, super regionals, all these things. I mean, is there any way to kind of qualify what your time at Duke has been like with Coach Pollard and just the job he's done in branding Duke baseball the way he has?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in 2015, I just finished travel ball circuit after my sophomore year of high school, and we were sitting in a conference room two floors up from where I'm sitting right now in Cameron Indoor in the Academic Center. And he said to me and my parents that in my time here, we would go to Omaha. And that was a big reason why I committed here as a high schooler, just the vision he had in the program and where it was headed. And so to be able to be a part of that and to be able to, you know, have a couple shots in my career to get to Omaha and then hopefully one more here in the end of this season, it's been really special. So it's definitely a cool feeling when somebody like that and somebody you look up to can follow through on their word like that. So it's been awesome to watch, and there's a lot more history to be made here at Duke.
Love it. Before we let you go, our traditional question, since you've been at Duke University, Joey, what has been your hardest class?
I'm going to give a shout out to Charles Skender of Financial Accounting. That one was tough. I was advised by my uncle to take that class just to get my feet wet in accounting and kind of understand it, and it was my worst grade here at school so far.
There it is. And a shout out to boot. That's what's even more impressive. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Hey, Joey Loperfido, belated happy birthday again. Good luck this weekend against Virginia Tech and down the stretch. Tell Coach Pollard we said hello.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Once again, reaching our finish line, and that is keeping our mouths shut and not letting anything slip out. Because we're giving out more hardware, more awards today from the Atlantic Coast Conference, and we will present those coming up at the top of the hour, the Power Hour, here on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
All right, a quick check of the NCAA Women's Regionals here in just a moment. I wanted to share this, though, with the group, and I did yesterday, and we're going to share it with you. Daniel Rappaport, not Ian Rappaport, Daniel Rappaport covers golf. He writes for Golf Digest, among other publications. Yesterday said, quote, in a tweet, a little birdie tells me that next week a group including Roger Goodell will play Pine Valley, Augusta, and Cypress all in the same day. Can't quite wait for summer solstice because Augusta closes for the summer. We'll start at the crack of dawn at Pine Valley. That does not suck. I got to tell you now, if you start at the crack of dawn at Pine Valley, then I'm going to guess you're not flying in 34Q down to Augusta through Atlanta, nor are you flying commercial out to the West Coast to play Cypress.
Wes, if
that's a pretty unbelievable day.
Wes, when you play Pine Valley, here's how you get home, via jet, your jet.
Yeah,
if you play Augusta, here's how you commute, via jet. Your jet.
Jet.
If you're going to do
jet.
I'm assuming Cypress is at Cypress Point. Is that what they're referring to?
Yeah, that would be, Not Cypress Gardens, not in West Palm Beach with Dick Pope Jr. on water skis.
Cypress
Point.
We're
talking Cypress next to Pebble.
Right, around the corner from the Jim Nance house, right there.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. I don't think that's physically possible. I think it's physically possible. Three rounds of golf. All right, three rounds of golf. Just think about if you were in one location and we're going to play three rounds of golf in one day. All right, try to squeeze, you know, just close your eyes and try to squeeze 54 holes in today at your club, if that's what you'd like to do. And then you're going to go travel Pine Valley to Augusta, travel Augusta across the country. I don't think that's physically possible. Mm. Unless Cypress Point says, hey, here's the keys to the locker room. Just turn the lights on and put miner hats out there and go ahead and slap at it on the West Coast. I don't think that's physically possible. It's awesome, but I don't think it's physically possible.
I'm hoping we find out. Let's put it that way. I'm hoping that it's somewhere along the way we get some documentation of them doing this.
Wes.
Because if you start at the crack of dawn at Pine Valley and you're first out,
you're done at 10.
If it's four of you.
10:30.
You're done in less than 4 hours if you're the first hour.
Okay, I'm giving you 3 hours.
Unless you got no game.
You start at 7.
Yeah.
Start at 6. You're done at 10.
Right.
You fly to Augusta.
So then you're on the plane.
It's noon.
Hour 45. You're in Augusta. Bang, you're hitting it at 12:05.
Nah, you won't be hitting
it at 12:05. You're done at 4. You fly to the coast. Okay, wait. You fly to the coast. 4 hours to the coast.
Longer.
Four and change.
You're flying
on the first tee at Cypress at 5. You're on the first tee. You're on the first tee at 5 at Cypress. 5 Pacific.
I don't think it's physically possible. I'd love to be a fly on the wall and be a part of that.
Oh, so would I.
I'd come out of retirement for that. But I mean, that's
Dillard. Get Dillard on the line. Tell him if it's Pine Valley, Augusta, and Cypress, I'm your guy, Dillard.
Well, who wouldn't do that?
I mean, I'm your guy.
I'm working.
If it's those three, I'm in.
Yeah, well, I mean, who wouldn't do that? I know people who've never
exactly.
played golf that would do that.
Clifford and Chester and Fuller would play golf if it was those three.
It depends what the treats were. They're not just going to tag along. They don't have to be fed and bathed. Massaged.
All right. Good luck to Roger Goodell. That would be
life.
Awesome. I would be so in for that.
By the way,
awesome.
Hey Raj.
All right.
Hey Raj, here's an idea. Leave that chair in the basement. You don't need it. Won't need it on that trip. Chester's laying on it right now. Big boy is.
All right. Little weather has crept into there's Chester. Yeah, he's over there in the corner and the Roger and Fuller sacked out near the Bojangles pillow.
That's
All right, little bit of a update on NCAA women's regionals for you. Top six teams in each regional advance to the NCAA championship. Louisville is kind of in the bag on a little bit of weather, but all the others are going off as scheduled. So Columbus regional, Duke is third there. They look like they're going to make it. Virginia's on the cut line, two shots behind Kentucky, who is three behind. We're supposed to say this by law, Arizona State. Apparently, we're going to get fined if we don't say something about Arizona State, according to our producer. Clemson is fighting the fight there. So that's a look at Columbus, where it looks like Duke is, seven shots clear. So, we'll see how it works out for Virginia with Kentucky battling for that last spot. Off to Palo Alto and Stanford, where the host Cardinal have a 22-shot lead on the field at 25 under par. You think that's their home course, Pack?
It is.
Stanford is 22 shots in front. Virginia Tech second, Wake Forest third. It looks like Wake and Virginia Tech are going to be safely into the to the next round. The Louisville Regional, Louisville is fourth going into today. Florida State is first. Beatrice Wallen, of course, the ACC's Player of the Year, headlining Florida State's efforts there. They are four shots ahead of Arkansas and South Carolina. So there you go.
Still work to be done, though. You just can't assume just because you're safely in after a day or so, you still got to close it and be in the top six in these regionals to move on to the next level. But listen, you know, that's why you got to go off your ball, man. It's a goofy game, as you well know. You know, it's kind of like baseball a little bit. One day you got to figure it out. The next day you're like, man, I can't wait. And you hit it all over the place and you wonder what in the world's going
on.
So just never know.
Baton Rouge has been weather delayed. They have yet to hit the first shot. They'll try and get that going. Everybody's been sitting around the hotel in the clubhouse eating the food to grill. Miami is the only ACC team involved in the Baton Rouge Regional. So there you have it. But looks like, you know, Louisville, Florida State in one regional, Wake, Virginia Tech in the other. Virginia's got a little work to do, but it looks like Duke's going to make it. So that would be good for the NCAA Women's Championship. Is Brother Brant going to be involved in that once again this year on the production side?
Brother Brant will absolutely be all over both the men and the women's tournaments, and he's excited about it. He's been doing his homework and traveling like crazy and you know, doing that routine. So he's fired up. He's totally into it. And if we ever need his services, he said he's available. So there you go.
Oh, I'd like to have Brother Brant on a little FaceTime action from maybe the championships. That'd be fun.
I will tell you after that, not to name drop, but I'm going to, after that Larry Penley surprise party Friday night at the Davies house here in beautiful Charlotte at Quail Hollow, and it was spectacular. Trevor Immelman, who's done some stuff with Brant, came up to me and said, "Hey, I have to take your picture." I said, "Sure, whatever you want." And I said, well, any reason? He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I'm going to rag your brother. I'm going to get all over his case. And so they were going back and forth having some fun. So, yeah, we can definitely do that. Brant would probably be up for that.
Are you like a foot and a half taller than Trevor Immelman, by the way?
Yes, and my brother, for that matter. So he was having some fun with that. So he and Brant, and I got tied into that text over the weekend and just started laughing at both of them, to be honest with you. So... Brant, that's his dog and pony, man. He does that Augusta
chip putt
and whatever that thing is, chip putt. I don't know what it's called.
That's drive chip and putt.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, drive chip and putt. Yeah.
But Brant's big time with all that. He's in tight with the folks at Augusta and all the college stuff. So, yeah, he'd love to come on here and goof around with us. We'll do that.
You start playing golf again, it's going to be important, your brother, things he can do access-wise for you.
I'm telling you, between Dillard Pruitt, Norman Chapman, Julian Taylor, Jim McPhee, and that crew, they've got me motivated to rustle through my 25-year-old clubs and get the cobwebs off that thing and see where it goes. We'll see.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.